Gentlemen, cancel your turkey orders. Hello, my name is Will, and this is Exploding Helicopter, the podcast asking if Finland is worth dying for. Now, is there anything harder to love than French cinema? Not in our experience. If their filmmakers aren't bamboozling us with avant-garde narrative structures, they're boring us rigid with angst-laden characters discussing existentialism amidst clouds of Gaulois smoke. The idea of simply entertaining the viewer seems positively offensive to their intellectual sensibilities. This propensity for pretension would be bad enough were it confined solely to their prestige productions, but even when embarking upon generic genre films, our Gallic cousins are still incapable of excluding their artier affectations. And if you want a case in point, look no further than the submarine drama we're reviewing on this show, The Wolf's Call. To help me review the film, I'm joined once again by my good friend Nick Rehack. How you doing, buddy?
I am doing fantastic, man. How are you?
I am doing well, but I'm going to have to start this podcast by apologizing to you because normally I like to take a bit of a dig at you, but I'm afraid I just couldn't think of a suitable insult to intro you with in this podcast. So the ones I was coming up with, they were just too rude, and there are some lines that even I won't cross, Nick. So I just had to go with that sort of fairly bland one that I gave you there.
I appreciate that, because there's times where I'm watching the films that you have me watch for the show where I'm like, is he going to use that line? Oh, this is what he's going to say. He's for sure going to say this. And sometimes I'm on the money. Sometimes you surprise me. And with this one, there's a couple things where I'm like, man, what could he pull from this movie? Because this isn't a typical kind of movie that we watch for this show.
Okay, well, rest assured, I will, you know, the next time you're on, I will endeavor to make up for the failure that you've had to endure on this particular podcast. But, you know, as always, I'm always glad to have you on any podcast that I do, but particularly glad to have you on for this one, because I know that you're going to be bringing some very special expertise to this particular podcast, because we're talking about a submarine movie, and I know that that you have previously appeared, very famously on the Exploding Submarine podcast, and I know that you are a fan of films about submersible transport. So happy to have you bring your expertise to my humble podcast.
If there's anything I could ever do to help, you know I'm here to help.
Well, excellent. Well, let's not faff around, Nick. Let's get stuck into The Wolf's Call. So let's plug some oversized headphones into the Sonar system and take a listen to the trailer.
C'est quoi la guerre acoustique? C'est dangereux?
Ok, j'ai peut-être quelque chose dans la trace. Du 4 temps.
Il n'y a pas de sous-marin à 4 pales.
Je sais.
Le rendez-vous avec les nageurs, là, c'est oui ou c'est non?
Le flanc du loup. Elle nous a détecté, second.
Poste de combat, tu diffuses. On doit récupérer les nageurs, c'est la mission. Trois splashes au sonar!
No point listening to that, it's all in French. The Wolf's Call, or Le Chant de Loup, came out in 2019. The story follows a French submarine crew who find themselves at the centre of an international crisis when Russia launches a nuclear missile at their country. With their nation under attack, they're ordered to sail into position and fire a retaliatory nuke. But wait, no sooner have the crew been given their irrevocable instructions, the attack is found to be a heinous trick. The Ruskies didn't fire the missile after all, it's actually some generic jihadists who are intent on destroying the West, or at least France, so perhaps they're not all that bad. The grand fromages of the French military are now faced with a terrible dilemma. With their nuke-armed submarine already en route to blast an unwitting Russia into radioactive rubble, they have no choice but to send out a second submarine to seek and destroy their own men. The Wolf's Call is written and directed by Antonin Baudry. The cast includes Lupin's Omar Sy and Reda Kateb, who starred in A Prophet and Zero Dark Thirty. The film has a 6.9 user rating on IMDb and a 3.5 user rating on Letterboxd. So, with all of that out of the way, Nick, what did you make of The Wolf's Call?
It was different. It's not, and I feel like that's the best way to say it. It's different. It's not this big, overdrawn action film where there's a lot going on in a submarine and you got guys chasing, but there's still enough tension there to make it kind of a really tense drama at the same time. Now, it doesn't have the tension and atmosphere to really feel claustrophobic, which I think they kind of missed out on, but it's just a film that confused me at times. Not for a story measure, but it just felt really uneven at times. The characters, they were just very one note. Like in this scene, they're happy. In this scene, they're sad. In this one, they're angry. And there was no, like, there was no evolution. There was no, I didn't really feel the need to cheer for anybody. Like there was no, they're the good guys, they're the bad guys. I mean, clearly that becomes defined. But there's a lot of stuff that happens, and I'm just like, what are we doing here? Like, why would we waste our time with this moment? Or why can we just cut this and get back to the other parts? Like, it just, it misses a couple marks, and that's disappointing because it has the potential to be like a really, really good, you know, maybe awards-worthy type film, but it just misfires and misfires often.
Okay. Well, yeah, I mean, I think you have put your finger on something about this film, which I think you need to calibrate your expectations if you're going into watching this film, because the way that I sort of lined up the plot, I really made it sound like one of those types of, you know, Crimson Tide style, you know, Hunt for Red October style thrillers with, you know, world, you know, the fate of the world is stuck in the hands of these submariners. And that's really not this film. I mean, if this film is I just mentioned this to you just before we started recording, but I sort of described this film, you know, it's like an art house Crimson Tide. And I think, yeah, if you're going to come into this film, then you need to not be expecting some sort of, like, you know, pulse pounding Tony Scott techno thriller. You need to be expecting something that is a little bit more character driven, a little bit more interested in themes than it is in, yeah, sort of world ending stakes. I mean, if you watch this film again, Nick, do you think, you know, kind of having, you know, got a handle on the sort of the style and tone of this film, if you watched it again, do you think you would enjoy it more? Or do you think, you know what, this is just not what I want from this type of film?
Well, I kind of put that to the test because I watched it 2 days ago.
Oh, okay.
And then I watched it yesterday. And I kind of felt the same both times. I felt like there was just something that was lacking. It felt like there was just a bit that wasn't there. And I really started to just kind of figure out, like, what is it that's missing? Because you don't want to just say, like, oh, that was terrible. Well, why was it terrible? Or why was it bad? Or why was something? And there's just a lot of things that just kind of didn't add up. And I knew something felt off, because whenever you recommend a film or suggest a film, or anytime we are ready to discuss a film, I never pay attention to the IMDb or any other ratings until after I watch the film, because I want to go in kind of as blind as possible. But halfway through this movie, I'm like, I can't be wrong here in that there's something off, right? So I go on IMDb and it's all these like nines and eights, and they're like, this is awesome, it's so good, you know, it's exceptional, this other stuff. But then I started seeing the other views of like, this is a clunker, like don't pay attention to these other reviews, like all this stuff. And I'm like, okay, so at least I know that, like, I'm not going crazy. Because I oftentimes will watch a film, and sometimes, you know, you might not be in the right headspace, or you're watching in a certain way, and then you realize it's actually a completely different thing. But when I watched it a second time, it was still very much that it just feels, it's overwhelmingly bland. And it's so bland that you start to pay attention more to the story and the plot, and you realize a lot of it is not nonsense, but a little bit like they're just kind of using something as a scapegoat, or like, oh, that's a really cheap, the film starts to feel cheap. And it starts to, like, kind of just turn you off a little bit, and then it becomes a chore to finish. So there's that's the bummer of it too, because there's so much potential for this film to be one of the great submarine films and just a great drama overall. But again, it just keeps misfiring. It just keeps missing these beats that I think would have been improved.
Well, I mean, the idea of this film is that it's taking place against the backdrop of like these escalating tensions between, you know, Russia following their invasion of Finland, and, you know, we get this, what we initially believe is a Russian missile launch. And so, you know, the stakes in theory are pretty high here. But you've already mentioned that you didn't really feel that this film ramped up the tension. So can you unpick what you felt failed in terms of portraying that idea like the world was potentially coming to an end here?
The film, in the first 20, 23 minutes or so, the tension is there, and it's really great because we're able to open up the film and the guys are in the sub. They're having a good time. It's like, okay, cool. They're people too. Like, it's not always so serious in the military, et cetera, et cetera. And the tension's amping up because they're trying to figure something out. It's all very last minute. Decisions need to be made now. It's urgent. We're focusing in on characters, like super close on their faces. The tension is ramping. As soon as that first kind of chunk of the film ends, and we kind of leave the submarine and go on land and start to explore these characters, that's when it starts to kind of dull and loosen because we don't really dig deeper into these characters. It all stays rather surface level. Mm. And then as it starts to envelop and we start to kind of find this mystery and intrigue, the main actor, I don't want to say he was miscast, but I just feel like there's not enough charm or charisma. Not saying he's got to be the hotshot big, you know, A-list yeah. lead, but he's got to have a little something to give you, a little something to bring you in. Like, you know, maybe he has the greatest ears in the world, but he really struggles with this or really struggles with that. And I just didn't find that humanity. I just found this guy who's really good at one particular thing and he knows it. And that's just kind of it. Like, there's nothing else kind of intriguing about him. Like, there's nothing that wants to bring me back and continue to follow this character.
Well, I mean, we may dance all over the place on this particular purpose. There's things there that you said that I want to come back on, but I want to follow this thread that you've just brought up about the main character in this film, this guy called Chanterade, because I don't know what you think. He's not that likable a character. I think there are some serious flaws with him as the sort of the hero. And sometimes you don't want your hero to be, you know, without blemishes. Actually, the hero having flaws can be a really interesting, compelling thing here. But I actually think, you know, the flaws that we see here just portray him as either a bit of a knob or somebody who frankly shouldn't be in the military at all. I mean, yeah. I've got some strong views here, but you know what are your feelings on that front, Nick?
Yeah, it does kind of feel that way at times. He's so cocky and he exudes this like, yeah, I'm the best. But then when it comes time for the actual event and the pressure's on, he's like he doesn't have a clue.
And he bottles it, doesn't he? Goes and hides in that bunk bed at like the most critical moment of the film. And I was watching it, I was thinking, what are you doing? Like, this is loathsome.
That's that exact moment where I'm like, what is happening right now? What are we doing here? We're just going to really cut and run and hide in a barrack for X amount of time. Not even a barrack.
Because everyone else is standing at their post. Everyone else is standing at their post doing their job. But he has some sort of like hissy fit. Oh, this is too much for me. I'm going to go and cry in my bunk. I mean, I was like, are we supposed to sympathize for him there? I mean, are we supposed to dislike him? But I mean, if we're supposed to dislike him, like, why?
Job
like,
well done.
I mean, it was a really baffling, really baffling moment in the film.
Yeah, especially where he lays down. He lays down in like in between the missiles or torpedoes in the weirdest place. And there's people running past and he's just sitting there, tears running down his face. No one's saying anything to him. They're just walking past and letting him have his hissy fit. I could understand if he's like batting 1,000 and he is like truly the absolute best, never cracks. And then something happens that shakes his confidence and then cracks him. That I could understand. but we don't really get that. Like, we get in the very beginning, he's kind of tripped up a little bit, and he's like, oh, I really wonder what this is. But it's not like it was something that was so obvious. Like, it's kind of a new thing, you know what I mean? So he's kind of chasing this new sound that he's not 100% familiar with. But as he does it, it's just, he kind of lucks into things. It becomes a Harry Potter thing. Everybody looks at Harry Potter as this great hero. Well, he's not. He's just lucky, and he has a lot of friends with him that are able to help out and allow him to accomplish those goals. He doesn't really establish friendships with these other characters. The relationships are just wild from side to side on the scale of, you know, friends or enemies or colleagues or coworkers. Like, there's just, it's such a weird blend of it all that I'm like, okay, does he like this guy? Are these two friends? Do they just know each other? Like, there's no real sense of who each individual character is. It's just kind of mushed on there and kind of glossed over because they're so focused on, you know, this mystery, this intrigue, that at the end of the day, never really felt like a big aha moment. If you're going to have something mysterious or an intrigue or a turn or anything like that, I feel like you need to elicit a reaction out of it. You need to have that aha, or you need to have, oh, no way. Like, but that never comes with this film, and it leaves you just bland and disappointed.
Because the other thing that really bugged me as well was that he, I mean, huge spoilers here, and as you should know already on the Exploding Helicopter podcast, we don't stand on ceremony here. We just talk spoilers. So the other thing that really bugged me is everyone else in this film dies, and Shonta Rhimes is the only person who gets to survive. And I was like, does he really deserve to live here? I mean, he does kind of save the day at the end, but I didn't really feel that he deserve to live, because at various critical moments in this film he's just acted incredibly selfishly, and I didn't really felt like ultimately that the scales balanced with him being the only person out of these two submarine crews he deserved to live.
And it was such a weird decision, because it's while it's happening you're even like, is this really happening right now? Like, this is, he's the one that gets to go. Like, he's the one that, like, you have Grand Champ, who obviously he ends up, spoilers again, being the bad guy, so obviously he's got to go. But you have someone like Dorsey, who it's like, he didn't have to go and do what he did. He could have easily done literally anything else and he would have been fine. And even at the end, when they're sending him up the chute, they're like, well, your eardrum's gonna burst, good luck. So now you've robbed him of his only special skill, special in quotes, because again, we don't know if he's just getting lucky or he really knows what's going on. Like, and now he has to live a completely different life. And what skills does he have to fall back on? There's just a lot of decisions that I think from maybe the mid, when they go to him and they're like, your urine sample tested positive for cannabis. And he's like, I'm not going to help you in this one. Like, what? That's the big turning point for me, where I was like, okay, so now we're just not really trying to push any type of conflict. It's just going to be whatever they say it is, is. Like, there, and that's it. The most we get from him when he finds it out and they're like, yeah, you're not going to be in the ship, he throws his bag in the water. Okay, what is that doing? You're mad? Show me you're mad. Say something to him. Fight back. Like, stand your ground. Do something. But he doesn't, and it's just like, then what are we doing here?
Well, do you think
we're just going to watch you mope around France for another couple of days? Like, what's happening?
Do you think there's an idea in this film that Shonta Rhimes is sort of tortured by this gift that he has for hearing, and so therefore by that ending where he is ultimately robbed of his hearing, it's like a sort of new chapter in his life, that where he will now be, he will now be at peace because he has been robbed of this thing that was his gift, but it was also sort of the thing that kept lumping in into trouble with all of these people that he was working with, that, you know, led to him having temperamental hissy fits at work. I'm not convinced by that. I mean, but do you think that was an idea that was somewhere in the script or the filmmaker's head here? I mean,
I can see it being an idea for sure. And the way the film ends, you know, taking that gift away from him, and there's a girl that he meets at a bar, and they start kind of dating and having dates and stuff like that. And he always knows when she tries to creep up on him and sneak up on him and scare him. But he always knows, and he always catches her last second. Until, again, spoilers, the end of the film, where she's able to get him, and he doesn't realize what's happening. So I can see them setting that up, and then it's supposed to be this big moment of like, man, he's lost that thing, but at least he's found love, or kind of like you're talking about, he's at peace now. But at no point in the film do they show him struggling with that gift. He's at a bar. That's the last place he should want to be if he has such sensitive sound and hearing. He should be like home, or he should be, you know, at a movie with earplugs in, or like something to protect his sound. We don't see that agony. We don't see the anguish. We don't see that look in his eyes of like, this is like a blessing and a curse type thing. It's just more of a like, yeah, I got really good sound. And she's like, oh, so like perfect pitch. And he's like, yeah, but that doesn't really mean anything. What are you talking about? If you're a singer with perfect pitch, or you have perfect pitch, you can parlay that into a myriad of other careers. You don't have to just sit in a dark room with headphones on being like, that sounds like dolphins that are 40 miles away. You know what I mean? Go into another facet. It doesn't have to be on submarines. I'm sure on planes they look for the same thing. Like, there has to be so much more. And they just keep it very, like, just look straight ahead. Don't look left and right, because then you'll see, you know, the faults within the script. Just keep looking straight ahead and keep plowing through, and you'll be fine. And it just, after a while, I'm like, it's not doing it for me.
Well, let's run with Chanteray's relationship with the girlfriend that he finds in this film. And, you know, that relationship, you know, ends up in the usual place, as these things do, in the boudoir. And, you know, that gives us the opportunity to talk about the sex scene, Nick, which is not something we normally get to do on the Exploding Helicopter podcast. But what did you make of the one that we get here? Because in keeping with, you know, our hero's profession, the way that it's shot and styled, it's portrayed in a way which emphasizes the sounds of sex rather than the sort of, you know, the bouncing boobs or the kind of thrusting buttocks that we would normally associate with a kind of, you know, conventional, you know, Hollywood style sex scene here. So yeah, what did you make of the nookie that we get here?
I thought it was interesting. I thought it was a new, like, interesting approach. I thought it was very, like, sweet and intimate, and you could say it's sensual just because of the, you know what I mean, the visuals of it, at least. And then the sound aspect of it, I thought was really interesting. Like, this is a different way to look at it. This is how he approaches it. And it's like, okay, cool. But we don't see that with any other facet of his life. So after a while, it's like he just looks like a creep at times. Like, that's like a weird thing he's into. And I can appreciate it. I can understand it. But we just don't get any other facets of his life. Like Sound of Metal, you know, the main character there, it shows that hearing loss at different stages of his life and what he does and et cetera, et cetera. But then we just don't get that here. We get that in one moment. We don't see him walking around being like, you know, hey, bro, real quick, I just need to put my head on your chest and hear your heartbeat. And it's like, what are you talking about? Like, there's no, it's not like he's with his parents and he, you know, does something like kind of similar with his, like his mom or something. Not the sex part, but like, you know what I mean? Like listening and really taking it in and kind of having that, like, you know, when I was a kid, blah, blah, blah. That nostalgia, that home feeling, I guess. But we just don't get that. We have this one instance, and then there's not really another instance after that. And it's like, so what are we really doing with this? Like, it could even be better understood if when he freaks out in the sub and then goes to run and hide under the missiles or the torpedoes, excuse me, like if we started to hear the sounds again, or we a little bit something. There's so much more that could have been done with the sound design that just wasn't. Even the score, there's nothing intriguing or exciting about it. It's bland, and it should be intriguing. It should be exciting. It should be doing things that kind of play with your ears a little bit if that's what you're going for. And they should have been doing that this whole time, but they just kind of step away from it and decide to stick with the story, and it just ends up being like a misfire, like a total misfire. It's, again, the concept is cool, and I think the idea is there. But it's just the execution is like, okay, I guess.
Well, one of the joys, Nick, of submarine movies for me has always been that scene where you get a sub that is trying to hide and is detected by the dreaded sonar ping. But we don't get that here. So we get in, you know, in a submarine movie that is sort of very determined to do things its own way. We get the titular Wolf's Call, which is this idea that a kind of sub sonar is flooded with noise. So you get this kind of howling sort of noise coming through, which means, yeah, your location is completely now known to the enemy. I mean, what did you make of that innovation, Nick? Did you sort of enjoy seeing something new here, or were you just nostalgic for, you know, just give me the ping?
A little bit of both. I thought the idea of bombarding the audio and really trying to mess up the sonar because of that, I thought it was interesting, and I never really had seen that before. So to know that that type of technology is out there and exists is pretty cool. But obviously, you want the ping. You want to see, we get the anti-ping, if anything, where the ship just disappears and goes off. But they're able to figure out with their calculations, like, no, we're going to keep doing this. We're going to keep doing that. And it works, but I just feel like we didn't really get anything with the Wolf's Call. With a film like this, I'm thinking, oh, they're chasing down this sub, which eventually they are. But I'm talking like I felt like the entire film was going to kind of be like a chase film in that they're trying to find this person. They're trying to find this team that have gone rogue or something, and they call themselves the Wolves of Liberation or whatever, like just something that would immediately tell me, like, okay, here's what they're doing, here's what they need to do, and why. Yeah. Instead, they just kind of like dance along, like, oh yeah, we got to do this, and oh, we got to do that, and oh, well, here's a roadblock, oh, here's another roadblock, like nothing. It just, when I hear the Wolf's Call, I'm thinking like, oh, here we go. But we don't get that. We get that for a little bit in the beginning when we first get hit with it, and then they say it.
Well, you think it's like building to something, isn't it? You think it's because
you would
the
think, yeah.
The film is called The Wolf's Call, but that doesn't happen. And so,
no, you, at just, all. So like,
why did we even bother? Why did we bother calling this film The Wolf's Call? Why did we even bother setting up a thing that, you know, setting up the notion that The Wolf's Call exists? I mean, you might as well could have called this film anything else, and it would have worked absolutely fine. It was a sort of bizarre. It was like something that the director and writer, the same person. It was like something that they had discovered in research and thought, oh, that's cool, but like never actually succeeded in sort of making a central component of the plot.
Yeah, and it becomes frustrating because it's as if it's been incorrectly sold to you, or it's you're buying, you know, one product and it ends up being something else completely altogether that, yeah, it's fine, I guess, but it's not what you were expecting. It's not what you wanted. And I think that also kind of dampens it because we keep waiting for that. We keep waiting for the Wolf's Call again. We keep waiting for that moment to happen, and it doesn't happen. We just don't get it, and it leaves you disappointed. Again, another misfire.
Well, Nick, have you got any final thoughts on The Wolf's Call? I mean, we've ragged on this film pretty bad. I mean, would you ultimately recommend people watch it at all?
If someone's looking for something different, something truly out of the ordinary, but that still feels familiar at the same time, check this film out, because it does have one or two like typical submarine film tropes, but it's different enough to warrant an intrigue. It is a little long. I think an hour 55 is a little too long, but it's not all bad. It really isn't all bad. It just could have been a lot better. And I think that's the big disappointing thing, is knowing that there was so much more potential for this film.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think if you want to see a submarine movie with a twist, then yeah, The Wolf's Call is definitely worthwhile watching. So let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to be looking at the exploding helicopter action.
Get me the president, now.
On foreign soil, a virus lethal enough to cause global contamination has fallen into enemy hands. Now, the fate of the world rests on the one man already on the scene. Jeff Speakman.
It's showtime!
As the military gathers its forces, Speakman must battle the terrorists alone.
Come on, Ben.
Come on!
I'm coming after you.
Forgot to wear your bulletproof cup.
Time Cop's Ron Silver and international box office sensation Jeff Speakman face off in a battle of global proportions. Deadly Outbreak.
We're back, and now we're looking at the exploding helicopter action. This occurs refreshingly early in the film when a Syrian chopper is hunting a French submarine that's trapped in shallow water. Unable to submerge and escape, the sub-captain instead opts to confront the threat head-on. Grabbing a conveniently handy rocket launcher, Captain Bullseye takes aim and blasts the bothersome whirlybird to smithereens. Problem solved. Nick, what did you make of the exploding helicopter action?
I was pleasantly surprised that it happened so early in the film. Most of the time, the exploding helicopter is the big apex of the film, the big moment it's been building to, as it should be. But it's also nice on occasion to get one up front. So when all of a sudden I see this helicopter coming through, I got excited. I was like, here we go. Like, this is going to be fantastic. And while it might not be the big spectacle I want it to be, it's still really cool in how it happens, because he fires this missile rocket and he kind of misses the helicopter. He kind of hits behind it. And I guess there's enough propulsion to mess with the system or the mechanics on board and then causes it to explode. But what's amplified by that is when it hits, we immediately cut back to inside the sub and they're all listening, waiting for a confirmation. And I thought that was a really interesting shot and way to describe that, because it just amps up the tension. It's like, oh no, he missed. And they're all realizing that he missed and they're done for, they're in trouble. And then we cut back to and bam, it explodes. So I thought that moment of tension was really fantastic. And then it's a solid explosion. I mean, obviously the thing is very CG heavy. But it's still a fantastic explosion.
Yeah, I mean, I enjoyed the sequence overall. I would definitely criticize the CGI here. It's not great. And I think as a result of the CGI not being great, they don't linger on it very, very long. So it just feels like, you know, you want a couple more beats with the explosion to kind of really enjoy the sequence. But I guess... Mm-hmm. If you stayed on that shot longer, it would just expose the kind of quality of the special effects there. And so they decided, you know what, let's just get out of this sequence now. And so, you know, I kind of respect that decision making, but you know, this is not the grandest budget film, so they've only got the money they've got to work with. So yeah,
right.
given what they're working with, I think we can't really have any great complaints about the exploding helicopter. And ultimately it was a good one for the reasons that you've kind of outlined here. It was only on this viewing for this podcast that I kind of realized, you know what? We have actually seen this scenario play out before in another film. I mean, you should know. You should. I'm going to test your memory, Nick. Can you remember the other film where we've seen somebody stand on deck of a submarine and blow up a helicopter with a rocket launcher?
For some reason, one of the machete films is coming to my head.
Well, he uses some sort of fishing line, some sort of...
It was like a harpoon type,
yeah, fishing line thing. It's actually, the film where we get to see this is Under Siege, where Gary Busey stands on the deck of the submarine that is meeting up with the USS Missouri. Yeah. And blows up the SEAL team that are trying to helicopter in. So it was it was only on this viewing that I suddenly thought, you know, yeah, I have seen this before. This sort
That's
of
very
sequence.
Recent too. That's exactly. Like 2-3 months ago we talked about that.
Which is probably why, you know, it's probably why what put it in my mind, because, you know, I mean, until we did that podcast, I hadn't watched Under Siege for God knows how long. So I'd kind of, yeah, forgotten the exact circumstances of that particular expanding helicopter. But yeah, you know, I don't know how long we will have to wait for a third one. But yeah, I enjoyed the one in Under Siege, and I enjoyed the one that we get in The Wolf's Call.
My only gripe is when they're trying to fire the rocket at the helicopter, they're having a hard time with the lock over the trigger.
Mm.
So he has his guy shoot the trigger off of the rocket launcher. And I'm watching this. I'm like, he gets it in one try. Never in a million years do they get that in one try.
You're like, so that's the only you've blown time off my thumb.
Something. That's the only time where I'm just like, please don't let this be the whole film. I can't do this today. And thankfully it wasn't. That's the only type of absurdity throughout the whole film. But that's my only gripe with it, is the fact that they had to shoot the lock off of a rocket launcher, mind you, with a rocket in it. It's not even like, here, let's take the rocket out to be safe. Shoot this rocket launcher that has a rocket in it. Get out of town.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Perfectly. Yeah, don't try that at home, people, please.
Yeah.
Okay, I think that just about wraps things up for this show. Nick, thanks for joining me once again. Is there anything you want to plug before you head off?
Only thing to plug would be Rabbit Hole Podcasts. You can go to rabbitholepodcast.com. There's a myriad of shows over there. I am on two. I'm on Lyrical Innuendo. It's a music podcast. And I am on Play MST for Me, which is a hybrid TV movie podcast. So check those out after listening to this.
There you go. Bit of further listening for you. As always, don't forget to check out the Exploding Helicopter website for more reviews and information about films where helicopters explode. If you can rate, review, or retweet us and help spread the word about what we're doing, I'd be very grateful. We'll be back soon. But until then, what should people do, Nick?
Continuez à surveiller les cils pour ces hélicoptères qui explosent.
This podcast is a proud member of the LAMB Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.